Hello, I'm Jonathan Renwick, and I'd like to start out by saying that I'm not a green crab, and this is not a concept. I stand before you today as a worm harvester of over 40 years' experience, a lobster fisherman, and the presiding president of the Goolsboro Clam Committee. Experience in these endeavors provides me with an uncommon insight into what is actually taking place here today. We're here today presiding over the beginning of the end of an industry as we know it. The control of the mudflats and the resources within those flats is about to be handed to just a few people. The control of all types of harvesting within the intertidal zone will be awarded to any town that has a clam ordinance. This bill may have been presented as a clam enhancement bill or even a clam conservation bill, but the simple fact is it's about ownership of the mud. You'll be saying with the passage of this bill that any town that has a clam ordinance also owns the rights to control the harvest of any other marine species within those same flats. After all, harvesting those other species is the clam resource, right? Sounds like a reasonable idea. Wrong. Even the clam flats within those flats are a resource owned by the state of Maine to be controlled and managed for the good of all the citizens of the state. Many people will tell you that the state's foray down the Clam Highway with the towns has been a great success. Try asking people from a neighboring town with no mud flats their own opinion. Many of these towns had clam diggers that were suddenly denied the right to harvest when the town laws went into effect. They were disenfranchised. The same fate now awaits the worm harvesters. As a marine worm harvester, I've traveled the coast of Maine many times searching for the best worming. I've never been pigeonholed into an area where I was forced with the prospect of over-harvesting or overturning the mud in order to pay my bills. I've always traveled to find more and better digging. I can see that this fate awaits me now, being boxed in. I can tell you that a few times in my career I have been confronted and threatened with bodily harm and even death by clam harvesters that also needed to harvest worms. Their tirades against me always included, "Why are you digging my mud? Aren't there any worms in your town?" These threats usually include slashed tires, sugared gas tanks, beatings, and being shot. Can you members of the legislature, committee members, and DMS staff imagine the consequences of putting the fate of other taxpaying citizens into the hands of people that think like this? I've been down this road before as a lobster fisherman. I've been to the meetings and watched as control of a tremendously expanding biomass has been given to the hands of a few people. The rule changes made in state did much to cement the rights of the resource into the hands of a few people, and I'm a lobster fisherman. I'm one of them. The list of broken promises made to people who got into the so-called apprentice program gets longer every year. If you don't believe me, ask anyone on the waiting list that has endured 3 and 4 rule changes while waiting to get their license after finishing the apprentice program. And they sit and watch the years slip away. As the presiding president of the Goolsboro Clam Committee, I realize that all changes in access to the resources other than clams will be made only in regard to the welfare of the controlling town's harvesters. The fox will literally be guarding the hen house. The fact is, if the state wants to go down this road with the towns that have clam ordinances, it can be done experimentally in one or two places by state regulation without the far-reaching effects of passing an ill-conceived law. This would allow the state, in fairness to all affected, to gauge the real intentions of the law, as well as to see some of the further-reaching unintended consequences of this law. The state is already doing this in the town of Goolsboro. The state has given control of the intertidal mudflats to the Clam Committee in regards to mussel dragging. Has anyone in committee done any research, asked any questions of the state in regards to how this is working? Would the state recommend giving the same power to every clam ordinance town? If not, why not? And has anyone sponsoring this bill asked a mussel dragger to see how they feel about the process that we're embarking on here? This leads us to a few questions for your consideration. Number one is, where does the Marine Advisory Council, you people, stand in regards to this legislation? We already know where the chief of the DMS stands. What scientific evidence has been used to justify this change? Not the green crab change, the marine worm digging change. Did the legislatures who proposed this bill sit down and talk with people from both sides of the issue? No, you heard they talked to the claim committees in the towns. Not a lot of worm diggers, except for maybe the worm diggers within that town that dig worms when they closed off the claiming by red tide or depletion of flats or whatever, because clam diggers are worm diggers too. Are there any safeguards in the bill to allow for change if unforeseen consequences prove as adverse as I believe they'll be? And will the state allow add-ons to the bill, which will allow towns to sell licenses, town licenses, for worm harvesting? Who gets these licenses and how many? Because I can't explain to you how it's handled for clam diggers. There are probably many other questions, but I'll leave you with this final thought. Any bill that does not provide for equal representation and equal protection under the law for all the people that the law affects should not even be considered. I personally, in the terms of the Marine Advisory Council, give this bill my own. It ought not to pass. Thank you for your time and your thoughtful consideration of these issues.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Question, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. You raised at the beginning the legislation. It was a regular print copy of the bill. Have you seen the proposed amendment?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And because it seemed as though some of your comments are in relation to the town's authority that isn't present in that amendment, it would be a state decision.
If the state petitions the town.
Well, it's the other way around. If the town petitions the state.
If the town petitions the state, right. If the town petitions the state to shut off an area to women, and they meet whatever criteria that the state comes up with, mm-hmm. that petition is in regards to the welfare of the clam diggers, not representing the worm diggers at all. And I have handled this process two or three times with the mussel draggers, actually twice, with one mussel dragging outfit. And I can tell you that within the town of Gouldsboro, the dragging of mussels on the intertidal flats has been effectively eliminated. There has been one outfit that has petitioned, and the only reason why they received a permit from the state, from the town through the state, was because they agreed to drag the mussels off, not do any washing, put them on immediately onto a badge and take them out of town. The regular commercial mussel harvesters will not even approach the town to ask for a permit.
So,
they're so mad.
If I might ask, because I think that the mussel is not circumstances.
Same issue.
Well, it's not what this is being proposed in this legislation, but in any case, there was discussion of the green crab as a challenge. It eats both.
Yes.
How do you feel about fencing being placed in an area to try to protect that resource and get some resurgence of the, you know, the population levels,
both
worms and clams?
There is no way that I, as a responsible worm digger, who also represent clam diggers, would even dream about bothering fencing or tearing up nets or anything else. And any issue that is confronted that way should be a violation handled by the Marine Patrol without the benefit of exclusionary favoritism in a bill, in a law. Doesn't need to happen.
So I'd like to, if I might ask a little, one more, go a little further on that line and understand your thoughts. So if an area is fenced off to keep predators out, we're trying to get recovery. If we've got a low population of worms, a low population of clams, you know, either or both, how do you feel about not allowing clamming or worming in that area so that both of those can recover more quickly?
I feel that it is not a mute issue. It is a mute issue, and I'll tell you this is why. A professional worm digger will not harvest worms in an area where there aren't worms to dig. You might go there, you might try it, but you will not continue to dig it for nothing, and you will not dig a flat over and over the same mud within a three-week period like was presented to you earlier. You'll dig that mud once, you'll set over and dig fresh mud every day. When that is dug, you will leave for at least a month or 2 months while the mud flats settle. And then you might go back and try it if you did really good there. But if you didn't do really good there, you're going to be somewhere else in the state digging worms. Bloodwormers are migratory just like the worms that we follow, and we go all over the state to do it.
Representative Devitt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Is it Mr. Renwick?
Yes.
Mr. Renwick, I really appreciate your testimony. It was very colorful and it was very enlightening, and I think that you brought up a few good points. The clamors, I have recognized that there's a problem out there on the flats, and they believe that part of that problem is related to green crabs, and they're proposing a way to deal with that. Mm-hmm. My question is, are the wormers willing to sit down and say, hey, there is problems on the flats? And I'm not calling them clam flats, I'm not calling them worm flats, I'm saying flats, period.
Exactly.
All right? Yes. So are the wormers willing to, like the clamors, sit down and say, look, we're having problems in the flats. Let's put our heads together and try to come up with a solution or come up with some things that we can try or do that will mitigate those impacts?
Yes.
Are you, as a wormer and representing other wormers, willing to
yes.
put the effort that the clamors have done?
Definitely.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. Representative Dickerson.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify a point or ask for clarification, and the department might need to help us out here. One of your points, many of these towns had clam diggers that were suddenly denied the right to harvest when the town laws went into effect.
Yes.
I may need to ask Deirdre, but I believe, is it just veterans who can get a license to go dig in another town, or are there other individuals? Because I know I have a veteran in my town that does not have a municipal clam license, and so what we've done is managed to get him a license in an adjacent town so he can go dig. Is it other individuals who can do that, or just veterans?
I'll tell you how it's handled in the town rules. When I believe it is statewide. For every 10 town licenses that you issue, you have to issue one out-of-town license.
Okay.
And while I was digging in Waldoboro, I'm from Birch Harbor, Maine, the other side of Bar Harbor, Frenchman's Bay, all of that. While I was digging in Waldoboro last spring, I had conversations with several clam diggers. And they said, well, we really don't mind you coming down here, but we really think you should have to buy a town license like we do. Control. So if the state says eventually, hey, this 10% worked, this exclusion worked, we're having good progress with this, what do you say we allow the towns to license worm diggers? The only person digging worms in that town, theoretically from that point on, with the exception of the 1 or 2%, whatever it is, will be diggers from that town.
Okay.
The migratory transition of bloodworm diggers chasing the best digging along the coast will be gone.
Okay. Chair Kumiega, could I please get clarification from Ms. Gilbert about what the actual law is, if she wants to come up and, or do we know what it is? Because I need to know that right now. I would like to know that in terms of the testimony that I've heard.
I
think some of the individuals in this room might also like
that,
to know.
That is the way it's done.
Are you
I would love to have anybody from another town speak up right
could
now.
Please shut your mic off for a second so I can. Okay. We have 10 pages of people signed up. We have. So, I mean, this question has nothing to do with this bill. Well, but it also, you just asked if you could ask Ms. Deirdre Gilbert about it, and she's not here. Well, okay, she is. All right. So, could you ask her off mic so we can continue with the public hearing? Because
I'd like to go sit down myself.
Yeah. Go ahead. Fred Johnson, please. Like I said, we have 10 pages of people signed up. So if the committee members could keep their questions brief and to the point, and if also people testifying could, as much as possible, be brief. If you have written testimony, please hit the highlights and hear everyone and let people get out of here in a reasonable hour.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Fred Johnson. I live in Steuben, Maine. I'm born and raised, lifelong Maine resident. Been here forever, and I've done just about every harvesting job that the state of Maine sells a license for. And, you know, since I was about 10 years old, I've been doing this. I've harvested bloodworms since I was 10 when they were sent in 3/4 apiece, not 25, not 26, not 50. I've harvested clams when they were $6 a bushel, and not a 50-pound bushel, a 60-pound bushel. And, you know, at the present time, the worms and clams, until the clam ordinance made it impossible for me to dig them, because I don't live in a town where the clams are real thick. And if I bought a town license, it'd be $100. If I bought an out-of-town license, it'd be $400. And I'd have to put in 14 to 20 hours conservation time. I don't mind conservation. I think conservation is great. But I don't think that we should be subjected, and I know I'm off my ways a bit, but I don't think that if you're going to have a resource and you require even somebody from a town to do conservation time, why you should charge an exorbitant fee to use that resource. That resource is for everybody in the state of Maine. A state license says the state of Maine. It doesn't say the town of Gouldsboro. It doesn't say the town of Harrington. It says Maine, period. And you got to have one to sell clams, but you also got to have a town license if you're going to dig them. Anyway, I've lobster fished, I've worked on shrimp, scallop, mussel boats, and, you know, up until now, and you used to be able to buy any license in the state. If you had any ambition enough to do it, buy every license in the state. Through ordinances, through moratoriums, through all of this, you're pigeonholing everybody in this room into only two truly open industries. One of them's worming, one of them's wrinkling. And it's pretty sad. I think we ought to visit a lot of that again. But the issue is, you know, if you had the wherewithal to do it, you could do it. And conservation is conservation. Any serious person in here that goes clamming, goes worming, goes picking apples, conservation is natural. If you're going to have an industry, if you're going to have anything, you're going to take care of it. If you're not going to take care of it, don't do it. Don't get in, get out. Get in for the long haul, stay out. And, you know, I always believed that laws were written to be fair and equal for everybody under them. I really feel that if this bill passes as written, the only ones that are going to gain on it are the clammers. It's not equal. It's not fair. Any questions?
Senator Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Johnson,
Johnson
as well.
Yes.
have you seen the amendment?
Yes, I have.
You've got a copy of that.
And I have seen it, and it still states, allow the towns to make an ordinance for clam conservation. If you give the town a right to make an ordinance, that ordinance is going to be down the road, well, you can dig here, but it's going to cost you $500 to dig in our town.
So I just want to point out that it says that the restriction is something which can be requested.
The first line says ordinance, doesn't it? The bottom of the first line?
So you've got municipality that meets the criteria of Section 4B may request the commissioner to prohibit marine worm and clam harvesting within an area closed through a shellfish conservation ordinance pursuant to subsection 3, paragraph A. So they may have a conservation ordinance, but whether they can close that to both worming and clamming depends on the approval of the Commissioner of Marine Resources, is written here.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I read it, certainly.
I read it as giving them a right to a petition for an ordinance. And as much as I like to trust my fellow man, if they've got a chance to make a buck on my back, I think they're going to do it.
So if, as the amendment states this is something which can be requested by the Shellfish Committee. It has to be approved by the State Department of Marine Resources. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your feelings about this change at all, given that there's that control instead of...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir. I think the true issue is depletion of clam flats. I think the true culprit is the green crab and maybe several other, you know, like seagulls picking the spat off the mud, Ida ducks when the tide comes in picking the spat off the mud because they like shellfish. I think that there are several ways to probably address the green crab issue. I know these traps. Well, why not grind them up and use them for seafood compost? There ain't enough meat on them to eat, to bother eating, you know.
Thank you. All right, very quickly. So you talked a bit about what you think this does or doesn't do, but let me try to re-ask that question.
Okay.
If the Department of Marine Resources is the one that gets to say whether it happens or not, does that address your concern about municipalities having too much control?
Somewhat, okay. But I've never heard of a town being denied once they apply for an ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Timothy LaRochelle.
My name is Timothy LaRochelle. I'm from Woolwich, Maine. I am co-chair of Woolwich's Shellfish Conservation Ordinance. Thank you, Senator Johnson, Representative Kamega, and the rest of the Marine Resources Committee. I am against LD 1452 because the restrictions in this bill are too broad. Clam industry is going through the same problem it had in the 60s, 10 years of warmer water temperatures. There was only one problem then and only one now, green crabs. When digging a few years ago, we started seeing these pock marks in the mud where the clam holes had been days before. We'd seen many sturgeon jumping in the area, so we blamed them for eating our clam seed. After seeing a video last summer sent by Chad Coffin, which is posted on YouTube, of hundreds of green crabs up in the thatch grass, handful after handful, I went to see in Woolwich had the same problem. It was obvious we did. Green crabs were everywhere. I attended the Green Crab Summit this fall, and seeing the pictures of bankings and eelgrass beds disappearing in other towns, I went to dig a few clams the next week and noticed the same problems in Woolwich. One eelgrass bed was diminished by over 75% of what it was just 2 years ago, and the bankings are caving down into the mud. The clam industry, as I said, is going to go through some hard times because of green crabs, and history has proven this. Fighting with other user groups will not solve any crab problems. At the Green Crab Summit, Chris McCarthy presented a study he did in Canada. They trapped 1 million pounds of green crabs in 3 years and spent $160,000 and 10,000 volunteer hours to restore eelgrass to one 285-acre bay. He stated that, when asked, this is not feasible to do unless a market for green crabs is established. This is on the Sea Grant website for anyone that wants to see this. Maine has hundreds of thousands of acres of mudflats and an entire ecosystem that is being destroyed by green crabs. And we are here to try to limit another industry from existing and doing their job. This bill also limits these closure areas to less than 10% of the total acreage of the town. I hate to disagree with the former representative that stood up, but another law allows towns to lease up to 25% of their flats to individuals. If LD 1452 is passed, it could allow 35% of town areas to be closed to worm harvesting, and the 25% that went to leases could exclude all worm harvesting and any harvesting by anyone other than the owner of the lease forever. If Governor LePage were to declare a state of emergency due to the devastation on our entire ecosystem from the green crabs, we could seek federal and state money to combat this problem, use the money to trap green crabs, and to hire Downeast Institute to provide seed for all the towns in Maine. providing these towns protect the seed from predators with nets and trap green crabs with a vengeance, and could prove the seed was being protected from predators. Protecting seed with nets does not allow any digger to dig unless the nets are removed. Therefore, this law, LD 1452, is not needed. Maybe a law that prohibits anyone from removing a net from any flat for any reason, but this broader law is far too extreme. Towns could also benefit from changing the law that only town wardens enforce municipal license holders. At the present time, a shellfish license from the state is required to sell clams or any other shellfish. If the state made a clam license that had the town's name that you hold municipal license or licenses in on your license, the Maine Marine Patrol could enforce town ordinances and relieve some towns' resources from their wardens and get them to help with trapping crabs and reseeding efforts. The town of Brunswick and all other towns that support this bill should concentrate their efforts on green crabs and protected seeded areas with nets, as Dr. Beal has been telling us since 2001. Downeast Institute and Dr. Beal have done all the research needed to see what we need to do. And if a state of emergency was declared, we could seek millions in federal and state money and do our best to knock back green crabs while seeding in thousands of acres of mudflats. That would benefit all Mainers, not a select few. I do not support LD 1452, and I hope you will not also. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Phil Harrington? Representative Depp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's now noon. We have people that are associated with other bills that are hanging around. Do we have kind of a plan of how, do we have any idea of how long the testimony and work session for this bill will go so we can let those people that are sitting around waiting to know how the day has been adjusted as a result of this bill? Thank you.
I don't think we do. No, we've got work ahead of us and we've got to keep doing it. And the longer it gets prolonged, the longer it's going to take.
Okay, my name is Phil Harrington. I've been a worm dealer since 1990 and a digger since 1964. I had a big testimony prepared, but most of my testimony has already been given by Peter Kent and Mr. Kelleher, so I'll skip over that. I just want to say that we would support anything to stay out of protected areas that are protected by nets. But we do not want town control over the worm diggers. And that's basically all I can say about it. You can read the testimony there if you want, but like I said, most of it's already been said.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
James Arsenault.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to address this committee. Most of what I wanted to say has already been covered. However, the one thing that I will touch upon, once again, in my testimony, that we, all the worm diggers I've spoken with, do support the idea of lawful protection of netting. Fact is, we assume that was already in place. We've since found it is not. Any actual gear on the mud that they use, yes, it should have lawful protection. I'll skip all the way down to the bottom, and I will read this. According to a letter written by Dan Devereaux of the Brunswick Marine Resource Committee explaining the amended version of the bill that is before you, they claim this is needed as a management tool for today's circumstances. So why has Brunswick pursued this issue more than once, beginning 19 years ago with LD 570 in 1995, during times economically and environmentally more friendly, far removed from the elevated green crab menace of today. And I included it on the back of your testimony just to show you. This bill from 1995 is one that we measure all action that's been taken since. Everything, as far as worm diggers go, everything that comes down the pike now, we measure against what was once tried against us at that time, which was wide-sweeping measures. Based on this history of Brunswick's repeated attempts to wrest control of our industry from the state to the municipalities, we in no wise trust that the amendments placed in this bill during the past week, again, they've only been placed in there in the past week, as an attempt to pacify Wormage and make this bill more palatable to this committee, will stay intact through the legislative process. We consider this bill a camel's nose through the tent flap in an attempt to assimilate our industry into the municipal shellfish ordinance expansions. It continues to deepen the chasm of distrust between our industries.
Thank
that
you
I'll
much.
Leave, because everything else I had been covered.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Having trouble reading this one. I think it's Alan Furnier from Wiscasset.
Asking if you head this way.
People in the overflow room could head, and we have a little more room in the room. The next person could go, Sherman.
Joey Hansen.
Hansen from Augusta.
Good afternoon. My name is Sherman Johansson. I've been a Marine worm digger for 47 years. I started digging worms in 1966. That was the first year I fell down more than I stood up. 1967, I became a real worm digger at the age of 7. I have worked violently, vigorously, and as hard as I could all my life just to support myself and my family, including my mother and my father. My father and my grandfather were also worm diggers and clam diggers. That job of digging clams was taken away from them when the town ordinance was set because they did not live in a particular town where they could do that anymore. My grandfather was half American Indian. He could have dug clams, but was ashamed of the fact that he had to go to a town to live to be able to dig there. I know that something has to be done, but the predators are not worm diggers. Clam diggers are more of a predator than a worm digger. They pick up clams and dig clams. I do not. Seagulls, ducks, and green crabs, especially green crabs, are the biggest killer. And there's also the scientific part of this whole entire thing, which is the ocean, which is dying at a rapid rate, whether we like it or not. The whole entire world is dying, including us. For every milliliter of seawater, there is 1 million bacteria and 1 million viruses and 20,000 proteins. This is in deep seawater, not shallow bays, estuaries, and shallow rivers which we dig worms and clams in. These are the essential substances of life for all sea life, from the smallest microorganism to the largest fish in the sea. When ships come into bay and port, they dump out up to 20,000 gallons of water, which present not only bad bacteria into our waters, which go into our estuaries. There are also poisons, toxins, which cannot be eliminated, which create problems for everything. Worms are migratory, and to tell me I can't dig here, I dug in Bath, Brunswick area for probably 40 years, from the 60s all the way until the mid-70s, worms died off. We had to go down east because you could only get 200 worms a tide. Clamming was no better than it really isn't no more now today, because everything runs, the whole entire earth runs in cycles. Cycles, cycles, cycles. Photoplankton is the essential lungs of the water of the whole entire sea. Taking photoplankton out of the water eliminates the process of breathing, which kills everything in the water. That, in fact, happened at McCoy's Bay a few years back when the depletion of phytoplankton in the water completely eliminated the oxygen, which killed every single thing, including fish, in that water on that day. The pH factor in the ocean, not only in the ocean, but in fresh water as well, will kill every single thing that is in that water by just changing a slight bit. I have dug clams, worms in clams, and I have seen clams dying, not because they were getting crushed or killed, because pollution was killing them. The sad fact of the matter is, it's too late for anybody to help anybody. The world is dying, whether you like it or not. And the killers are here, and present, and are not going away. No matter how much you try to conserve or take care of your industries. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Alan from Wisconsin come in?
Yes, I was going to say anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chad Goffin?